The Borderlands of Science, Where Sense Meets Nonsense, by Michael Shermer. Copyright 2001 by Michael Shermer. This full-length reading was published by arrangement with Oxford University Press, Incorporated, and was produced in 2001 by Books on Tape, Incorporated, which holds the copyright thereto. This book has 319 pages and is read by Grover Gardner. Dedication to Devon Zeal Shermer. With a father's love and hope that you find that exquisite balance between orthodoxy and heresy, between being open-minded enough to consider radical new ideas, but skeptical enough not to be bamboozled by nonsense, and discover on the journey the isthmus of your middle state. Placed in this isthmus of a middle state, a being darkly wise and rudely great, with too much knowledge for the skeptic side, with too much weakness for the stoic pride, he hangs between, in doubt to act or rest, in doubt to deem himself a god or beast, in doubt his mind or body to prefer, born but to die, and reasoning but to err. Created half to rise and half to fall, great lord of all things, yet a prey to all. Sole judge of truth, in endless error hurled, the glory, jest, and riddle of the world. Alexander Pope, Essay on Man. Introduction. Blurry lines and fuzzy sets. The boundary detection problem in the borderlands of science. In late September of 1999, I went to Stonehenge, the magnificent druidical stones laid out in the countryside of southern England. Well, sort of. I traveled to Stonehenge, in my mind, as part of an experiment on a phenomenon called remote viewing, the belief that one can, in the words of my remote viewing instructor, Dr. Wayne Carr of the Western Institute of Remote Viewing in Reno, Nevada, experience, feel, see, and describe detailed and accurate information on any event, person, being, place, process, or object that has ever existed, does exist, or will exist. According to Carr, historically, remote viewing was developed at Stanford Research Institute for the Army and the Defense Intelligence Agency. It was used in a secret espionage program for 20 years. This is why few people had heard of remote viewing until about 3 years ago when the government went public on Nightline. Protocols have now been refined to allow trained remote viewers consistent detailed accuracy. Remote viewing could be considered a distant cousin to some other psychic disciplines, with the main difference being the extremely high and consistent accuracy. A single remote viewing usually takes about 1 hour or more. During this time, one can become bilocated and have strong target contact with all of one's senses. A target can be in the past, present, or future. This is not some kind of psychic network. Rather, it is a serious scientific technique for exploration. Since I am a social scientist and historian of science who studies fringe and borderland claims to determine if they are scientific, pseudoscientific, or non-scientific, and I had seen the Nightline report on the CIA's 20-year experimental program in remote viewing, originally set up to discover, for example, the location of hidden Soviet military bases, I wanted to try it myself. I signed up for Dr. Carr's weekend seminar in remote viewing, touted as professional targeting services, corporate business and private consulting and target contracting, guaranteed quality, and joined a dozen other hopefuls who were going to be taught how to discover, according to the brochure, the location and condition of a missing person, child, or object, future potential markets in a certain area, the cause of an event or disaster, possible medical diagnostic considerations, personal family history and events, unsolved cases or mysteries, the effects of a personal decision, the location of mineral or petroleum deposits, and much more. As its name implies, remote viewing involves sitting in a room and viewing something remotely, that is, outside of the normal range of one's senses. Some claims for remote viewing's powers are modest, others not so. Science writer Jim Schnabel produced the first full-length volume on remote viewing by a non-participant, tracing the U.S. government's involvement with some of the world's most famous psychics, including Russell Targ, Hal Puthoff, Uri Geller, Ed Dames, and Joe McMonagall. Schnabel's tome recounts endless anecdotes, usually confirmed with additional anecdotes by believing eyewitnesses who were themselves in remote viewing, including a part-time Christmas tree salesman remote viewed his way into the heart of a super-secret National Security Agency installation buried in the West Virginia mountains. The same psychic described previously unknown details of a high-tech Soviet military research facility, details that were later confirmed by spy satellite. An Army remote viewer was the first in the U.S. intelligence community to describe the Soviets' new Typhoon-class submarine, while it was still indoors under construction. A woman in Ohio psychically found the location of a crashed Soviet bomber in the jungles of Zaire, helping a CIA team to recover the wreckage before the Soviets got there, and earning praise from President Jimmy Carter. She went into a trance, and while she was in the trance, she gave us some latitude and longitude figures. We focused our satellite cameras on that point, and the plane was there. Shortly, we shall examine the problem with remote viewing protocols that led to the mistaken belief that the number of hits by remote viewers is above chance. Experimental psychologist Ray Hyman, professionally trained and experienced in proper experimenter protocols, and the only outside observer allowed to review the raw data from the CIA's remote viewing experiments, concluded rather definitively, by both scientific and parapsychological standards, the case for remote viewing is not just very weak, but virtually non-existent. It seems that the preeminent position that remote viewing occupies in the minds of many proponents results from the highly exaggerated claims made for the early experiments, as well as the subjectively compelling but illusory correspondence that experimenters and participants find between components of the descriptions and the target sites. And, as we shall see, these claims for the power of remote viewing are conservative in comparison to what has been claimed for it in recent years, even compared to the following observation by one of the government's top remote viewers, Fern Gauvin. "The biggest concern is, will I be invaded by evil spirits? Maybe, but I can protect myself. Some other people call it, okay, cover yourself with the white light, and so on. All that is good intention, and if I have good intention, I don't care if you, a seductive evil spirit, are a whore on 14th Street, I don't want anything to do with you, then you don't stand a chance, I don't care what the price. It's because I don't want to. I think that goes a long way in this line of work." Such discussions, many this absurd, went on at taxpayers' expense for 20 years under the cloak of national security. And this is comparatively conservative material. For my weekly radio show on Science Talk on NPR affiliate KPCC in Southern California, I once spent an hour talking about remote viewing with one of its champions of the 1990s, Courtney Brown, a political science professor at Emory University, although I was not allowed to introduce him as such because of a contractual agreement between Brown and Emory that he not mention his affiliation when discussing remote viewing. For Brown, locating crashed planes and missing persons is child's play. He's after bigger targets that include, according to his 1996 book Cosmic Voyage, A Scientific Discovery of Extraterrestrials Visiting Earth, Martians and aliens from other planets, multidimensional beings from other galaxies, spiritual leaders such as Jesus and the Buddha, and even God, who, he says, actually resides within each of us. According to Brown, he has even had conversations with Jesus about life on Earth and the multidimensional life to come. Yet, over and over throughout his books and in my interview with him, Brown insists that he is a scientist and that remote viewing is solid science, as good as anything to be found in the social sciences. In fact, Brown has renamed the phenomenon scientific remote viewing, or SRV for short, and in his 1999 sequel, Cosmic Explorers, he reviews the detailed procedures for proper data collection, identifying target coordinates, SRV protocols, and the classification of categories of remote viewing data. That claim places this phenomenon squarely in the seat of testable knowledge, and as we shall see, There are some serious flaws in the protocols of remote viewing.
Sample complete. Ready to continue?